Hi there. I'm Carla. See, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Carla.
I was originally a skitty person, and I have now moved across the country, so I'm a member of the world group of OA. So I am down about 130 pounds from my top weight of 333. And I have an abstinence date of January 25th, 2019. That happened in one of the Skivvy meetings, the Friday noon for today meeting. I'm here today to be of service to you by sharing my experience, strength, and hope. So my experience is regarding my disease and what happened. So let me. I've got some pictures of what it used to be like. So here's a picture that shows a relatively normal looking, 8-year-old in with her family. And you see my mother's a little heavy set and everybody else is pretty much of normal weight. And then as time went on, I started becoming more like my mom. So eating like my mom and things like that. So that's kind of where I came from. I became heavy as a child, and when I discovered I was overweight at 9, there was a one of those family photos, and I wish I could find it. I have seen it recently. It showed me to be the really fat kid next to my fat mom and the skinny rest of the family. I remember getting to order two cheeseburgers at a time on our once a month night out. I started to get teased at school, and my brother, who had once been my best friend, now needed to fit in and joined in with the teasing. And I'd like to think that was all about the weight, but in program, I've learned to recognize that being a know-it-all and being a goody two-shoes didn't help either. So at 9, I do remember considering the knives in the kitchen and which one I would use to end my life. I believed I left childhood behind at that time and spent the next long while in depression and anxiety, and there was no thought of help. I couldn't talk to my parents. They made it clear they weren't about to take any issue to anyone as sketchy as a psychologist. There was a very strong bias against that. At 13, my mother made a deal with me to buy a bikini if I lost 13 pounds. And I did it, and I got the bikini, and the film footage of me running through the sprinklers in it still haunts me to this day. So why even try? I was horrified. I'm one of those, I don't see it when I look in the mirror, but give me a photograph and it's like, oh my Lord, I can't believe I am brave enough to go outside and see that and show people that. So I definitely have a body dysmorphia thing going on. So from there, I didn't really attempt much in the way of diets or weight loss programs. I already decided I was a hopeless case on that front. Not only that, but there wasn't a hopelessness about it. Can see in my family, it's like the round, soft ones were the nice people. And I definitely wanted to be more like the nice people than the skinny, bitchy people, pardon my French. But that really, there was a line in my family, and you know how kids get really judgmental. And so I grew up with that bias. And so there was a part of me that always wanted to be one of the round, soft ones, the favorite aunts, the favorite grandmother. They were all the soft, cushy ones. So in my family, so there wasn't this big drive to be thin. There wasn't this big, there was a need to be healthy. My mother ended up becoming full on insulin dependent diabetic, but man, she was always there to cheat the system. It was pretty amazing to watch. So I do remember being completely offended by a PE teacher who dared suggest I was a compulsive overeater. The nerve of her. And I do remember my mom one time, just in one conversation, mentioning OA and that little seed. She is the reason that I'm here. And I wanted to just put in a couple of things about my mom. She was a a pretty good cook. And but I would say that in my family, my attitudes towards food have been one of my greatest enemies ever. There was something about food being a treat, food being something you deserved. A lot of our celebrations were over the top with sweets. And a lot of the rewards had to do with sweets and that sort of thing. So it's the good kids, you know, the good kids get the treats and the bad kids don't deserve it. And that is still deeply ingrained in my mind. So my habit of decades is that when I'm feeling sorry for myself, you know, I deserve it. I deserve to have something that's not good for me. And these days that's changed. It's not necessarily a sugary thing, but it's still that voice in my head saying, you can get away with this, you can get away with that. And you know, I think our family history, and this being Mother's Day, you know, my mom grew up in want and poverty, and she was very thin as a small child and had a really rocky start. And so when she had her family, she was determined that it was going to be the idyllic childhood, whether you like it or not, kind of thing. And that poor creature was really literally doing the best she could with the love in her heart. And so it is someone that I have dealt with the resentment over, and it is possible to view them as definitely a sick person who, you know, if only in her lifetime she had been able to find the joy and peace that I found in mine. She never made it to these rooms. I don't know if she would have been one of those that is actually, you know, not able to take advantage of this program because, you know, her mind would not accept anything that was outside of her map. So, you know, but I made it here. So I originally came into program sometime around 1989, and I was a single working chick who had been overweight forever with a top weight then at around 220. And I made some changes in my mid-20s, lost some weight, got my first boyfriend. When that ended in disaster, I became deeply depressed and knew I would die if I didn't look after myself. And I started working out, lost a lot of excess weight. But on a vacation with a girlfriend in Europe, I started eating crazy again, and that scared me because I really liked the way I looked. I liked that new life, you know, the new freedom and the new healthiness. I wasn't thin, but I was certainly better than I was at 220. I had a good social life and a lot to lose. And that's my experience. So my strength is how the program turned my life around. So. First time I was around 28, 29 years old, and I found my people there. I took a 1-year trip. I had a house sponsor, how food plan. I was on the gray sheet. You know, it was very specific, and there was this very specific way to do the 4-step. And it was a very structured program, and I thrived in that. I was going to several meetings during the week in Orange County. It's still a huge program in Orange County. I don't know that you can find a meeting any time of the day. Back in the 90s and early 2000s, you could not, no, the late 80s and early 90s, you could find a meeting any time of the day you needed one in person. There'd still be people there. So I was working the How 12 steps with a How sponsor. And I gave my inventory away to her in step 5. And that's really all the steps I remember doing back then. So I never got to a lot of the good stuff. So I met this guy in the rooms while I was on a losing abstinence. And we were unified on the How food plan. It satisfied. It was enough. I didn't listen to my sponsor who told me not to get into a relationship. What did she know? He was in program, so what's the problem? And so what changed? I was there, you'd think I'd know. But I never made a decision to quit at that point. I basically let other areas of my life crowd it out. I have been a lifelong human doing rather than a human being. And in the preparation for the wedding, then the ex-wife issues, the kids, the job transitions, relocations, I lost any focus I had on self-care. I was consumed with caring for everyone else around me, and that was to my own devastation. So meetings became optional, and then they were just too hard to fit in. There was less and less time to prep food, and I let the monster back into my life with a vengeance, because eating was somehow all bundled into self-pity, indulgent love, and self-hate. I ate my way to 333 pounds, and I had trouble finding clothes. I had to use handicap stalls in restrooms. I needed seatbelt extenders in cars and planes. My knees were becoming arthritic. My feet were collapsing from the pressure. That's something I still carry with me today. My blood sugar crossed over 200 fasting. I raised my children to eat compulsively and brought my daughter with me to a meeting 14 years ago. She at Skivvy, she wasn't interested, and I was too busy to come just for me. So I have some pictures of me at that time. I'm sorry about the sun in my room. The sun in my room is brutal, and it does this at this time of the day. So it is what it is. But, so let's take a look at some of these. So that's me on the far right. And as you can see, this is that family of five, and we're all pretty hefty beings. We all ended up having, even my dad, you know, girth issues as we got older. This was me at pretty much my top weight, next to my giant niece that's 6'1". And this is at my son's graduation, and he's 6'4". So I'm in the land of big people, and I'm only 5'4" now. But so that is where my disease took me. The next to the last house, so I knew something needed to be changed. I knew that OA held the answer for me, and I did keep not going. I just kept not going, making the choice to not show up. So the next to the last house on the block was bariatric surgery, and although I knew it was a stopgap measure for diabetes, I wasn't looking for a cure for my insanity at that point, but it was going to be a good cure for diabetes temporarily. I knew it was not a cure for my insanity around food. And at the back of my mind through the entire process, I knew OA was my only hope, the last house on the block. So the surgery gave me free rein to eat what I felt like until it didn't. It took about 2 years for my blood sugars to start heading north, crossing back over from dead at 100, which was great, you know, and I was watching it creep up 110, 115. I found a meeting. I identified that meeting at noon on Fridays because I could sneak over there during school, during lunch, and no one would know, but I didn't go. And I didn't go, and I continued to not go until crazy broke loose at home. And my family was in shambles. I again thought I was going to die because of what was going on in my family, and that I damn well better get in and stand up for myself and do something radically good for myself that I didn't feel like doing. So I had that impulse for self-preservation and walked back into an OA meeting on January 4th, 2019, 26 years after I walked away. I had a 26-year relapse. This time I came in with the gift of desperation, and this time I knew where my path was leading, the long, slow, debilitating death that we choose to face rather than recover. I made a decision to set aside everything that my engineering college-educated brain knew, and I opened my ears to whatever you guys had to tell me. And I listened like my life depended on it, because it did. I heard for the very first time that food was cunning, baffling, and powerful. I heard that without help, it was too much for me, that acceptance is the answer to all, really all, my problems today. I heard that. My little Friday meeting accepted me, had hope for me. They listened. Thank you. They listened to my struggles, and in tears on January 25th, I told them I was not able to stay abstinent. And one of the long timers asked me if I was abstinent right then. It was noon. So yes, she asked for a plan for lunch, then a plan for dinner, then told me after that, all I needed to do was make it to the pillow that night for day one. And it has now been, 5 years and 4 months of no sugar. It hasn't always been easy, but I can tell you today, I couldn't care less about Portos or Yum Yum or any of those other things my fellow workers rave about and put on their desks. I just don't care. I'm pretty sure they would make me sick if I tried to eat them. So I'm now going to talk about my hope, which is what I'm learning today. And I've gone through all the 12 steps 4 times with 3 different sponsors in the 5 years since I returned. It's different each time because each time I'm different. So each time I've experienced transformation in my mind while either maintaining or losing my weight. I'm down 40 pounds since I walked in January 2019. I've learned that I am salvageable and worthy of being saved. I've learned that my obsession with fear was shutting me off from living my life and shutting me off from my higher power. I've learned that the love I need for my food is to nourish my body, not to feed my obsession. I've learned that each of my family members has their own higher power that is working with them on their recovery. And it's not me. It is not me. That's my growth plate right now, is continuing to surrender my family members to their higher power. Because unfortunately, it seems like, you know, I raised my kids in this disease just like my mom raised me in the disease. And my living amends is that I get to surrender them to their own higher power, who is invested in bringing them forward in their recovery. So nor do I need to interfere with that power's work. I've learned that life was meant to be faced on God's terms, not mine. Thy will be done, not mine. I've learned that that means that I don't really get to have a will. That my will means nothing, because my will is uninformed and ignorant, and that God's will is really the best way. And I can really open my heart and say, thy will be done, not mine. So whatever happens, so the hospitalizations we've had, the crazy I've had in my life, it's like, it's here for a reason. And sometimes, you know, those miracles don't occur unless you have trials. So my spiritual growth happens in the context of the difficulties I face, especially if I'm facing it with me and God together. I've learned that this life is meant to be faced on God's terms, not mine. And I have faith that whatever comes, we'll handle together. And these are all things I missed the first time in program. So it doesn't matter how freaking long it's been that you have been away, always come back. Always come back. Thanks for letting me be of service.